to the Sangha when one of us answers an invitation to speak about her life and her journey to practice, her path of practice. And I acknowledge that for most people, this is kind of a vulnerable moment and a kind of, you know, can bring up a lot of feelings. And I wouldn't be surprised if Shalema had kind of some feelings about presenting tonight. And I think everybody who's ever done this has those feelings, you know, surface. But she's acknowledging that. So I'm really pleased to welcome Shalema tonight. And I just want to ask everyone to just listen. And it's just a rare opportunity to hear someone speak about their life, speak about their practice, and it's a kind of intimate moment. So welcome, Shalema, and would you like me to lead the beginning lecture chant, or would you like to do it yourself?
You know what? I think if you give me a second here, that's the beginning before a lecture.
Right.
I'll take a go at it.
Okay.
Okay.
It's all yours.
All right. Mujo jen jen mi mo no wa yaku san man go ni mo ayo koto katashi ware ima kimon shi juji suru koto o atari negawa kuai norai no shen jutsu chiyo gechi tata masaran an unsurpassed penetrating and perfect dharma is rarely met with even in 100,000,000,000 kappas. Having it to see and listen to remember and accept, I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words. I did the long version. Thank you. Welcome, everyone. I appreciate you coming to listen to my story and or stories. I tried very hard not to like feel that, oh, you know, I can do this. I can talk. I can chat with my Sangha sisters and brothers, but let me tell you, as the time got closer, that, oh yeah, you know, you're on. So I ask for your patience and thank you. Jim asked me some months ago if I would consider doing a Way Seeking Mind talk. And at that time, I was not ready. And maybe a month ago at the Still Breathing Sangha, my teacher, Osho, she just changed it to Osho. The Sangha was going to have another member do a Way Seeking Mind talk, and she couldn't come. So it was offered to the rest of the members, is that anyone who would like to volunteer? So I raised my hand. I had no practice, and I did my first one. And it was, what happened is that once, so I talked from the gut, and I'm hoping to kind of do that tonight. But once I did that first one, I was like, why didn't, I need to call and ask Jim if I could come and maybe try it with the Valley Spring Sangha. So here I am. And I, you know, it's like, what do I say? Where do I start? How have I landed here? You know, this practice, this gut wisdom practice. So I'll be bouncing back and forth because I did take a few notes because I want to hit all the spots. But before I get started, I need two volunteers. I need someone to track the time for me. If anyone, I don't care who would volunteer, that would be lovely. And then I need a volunteer to help me cue the questions and answers, if there's a Q&A at the end. So,
Shamima, I'm the Doan tonight, so I can have your time.
Okay,
so
great.
How much time, when do you want me to let you know that?
Well, I think, Jim, how much time do I have? I'll try and get through this within 25, 30 minutes. Do I have that time frame?
Oh, easily, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Easily, cool. Okay. So
I'll prompt you, Shalema, when you're getting close.
Okay, all right. So first I want to offer thanks to my ancestors of old. And then to my current ancestors and to my ancestors of this lineage. I'm only here. And also to my earth family. And also to all the sanghas who have held me. And there's quite a few. Valley Stream, Berkeley Zen Center, San Francisco Zen Center, Green Gulch, Tassajara. I've been to all of them, and I've always felt very much welcome. So I want to offer thanks in that way. June 2019, I was blessed to receive the precepts at the Berkeley Zen Center. And of the 16 precepts, I chose the one not to lie. So I walk with that one in my daily life, not to lie. And this practice, so I'm going to start at this practice and then maybe take you down to when I was like 18 months or something. But this practice has offered me sips, you know, a little bit of this and a little bit of that, but mostly sips of liberation, sips of enlightenment, sips of wisdom and understanding. There's some little nets flying around in my face here. Sips of non-suffering and sips of suffering. And I've had snippets of my original face, or I thought my original face. So, you know. And so I've also kind of seen the dance between the ultimate and the relative play of life. I've gotten a few snippets of that. So back in the mid-70s, I got a call from Spirit. So I've always had a connection with Spirit. I've always been able to see. I've always had visions. I thought everybody had. And so I was really surprised when I would ask people, and it was like, I've never had a vision. What are you talking about? So in the mid-70s, I was at that time working at the post office and working super hard to gather all of my little things in life, cars, clothes, books, vacations, all the things that I thought would make me. And during, there was a part when I was working, the bell, the whistle blew, and I had a vision of my looking at myself walking in chains. And I was like, oh my God, I am really going crazy. What is up with this? And then I kind of remember that, you know, I've always had these visions, but so since I thought I'm seeing myself in chains and I must be going crazy, the two questions that came up for me before I heard of Zen, before I read a Zen book, was who am I and what am I here to do? Those were the two questions that landed in my lap. And that was my hunt. That was my search. That was the starting point for me. I believe consciously I would write every day, who am I and what am I here to do? So I was really scared. I was unhappy. I was miserable. And I wanted to find like what am I doing wrong? So I actually changed my name to Shalema. And please, whatever you do, don't ask me what my family named me, because I'm not going to tell you. But I changed it to Shalema because I want it to be perfect. So Shalema means perfection. And I was like, that's the goal, to be perfect. It's too bad Zen has turned me upside down and said, no way, sorry. And so my journey in life started with my seeing this vision. I saw this Black woman step up out of a body of water with a snake wrapped around her neck, and she was holding the head of the snake and the tail of the snake. I'm looking at this vision, and I realized that was me. I'm like, oh, wow, really? And as she emerged up out of the water, she was like hunting for something. She was on the hunt. She was looking for the snake. And then the first glimpse of my being on earth, I saw myself at about 18 months, and my mother was having me put collard green plants in the ground. And I was like, well, that is something. And so I'll start there with my parents, and I'll start also with where I grew up, which is in Georgia, middle Georgia. And my mother, one of 15, my dad, one of 13, I'm one of 9, a huge family. And before I went to school, so there was no kindergarten, no preschool, you know, I just kind of left off the yard and was thrown into first grade. And it was very frightening for me because even though there was a lot of wisdom when you live in the country and we lived on the land and my mother had a green thumb and in seasons we plucked the fruit and my mother canned the vegetables. We were like super poor. We were really poor, I thought, but we were. So I went to an all-Black school, elementary, junior high school. I was one of the kids that were segregated. I was born in 1951 in Middle Georgia, where if you were black in body, you went to the back of the bus. You drank from a colored water fountain if you were in a public place. And it's interesting, I didn't know that that was wrong. No one sat me down to tell me that that was wrong and not appropriate, but this is what I saw. And so the systems, you know, like society, politics, education, spiritual and economic, the economical part of my growing up was I felt like I was a misfit and I didn't belong. I didn't feel beautiful physically. I didn't feel like I was smart enough cognitively. But these are standards that I set up for myself. And I remember my auntie teaching me how to tell time with a clock that she drew in the sand, because we had no electricity. My mother cooked on a wood-burning stove. We had two springs where we got spring water. So we had an outdoor toilet with two that, you know, you could go in with anybody actually to use the bathroom. And my father was, you know, he loved his moonshine. He made moonshine. I'm sorry I never got his recipe, because I could use it right now, not to make moonshine, but to do other things with that. And so here we are. There were nine of us. My mother was super strict. And we lived on the land in a pasture, in a house, like one step up from a barn. There were one room for the children, another room for my parents, and then there was the kitchen. We had no refrigeration, no phone, no clocks. I mean, it was like we got up and we went to bed with the earth rhythm. So my mom had a third grade education. My dad had a third grade education. My father was Baptist. My mom was Methodist. And because this little place that I grew up was kind of small. And I went and looked. I said, you say small, well, what was the percentage of the population? So 75.7% white, 21.4% black, 0.5% Asian, 1.7% Hispanic. And there were no Native Americans in this little town. There was not even a red light or a yellow light. So everybody had their eyes on you. There wasn't any place you could go that somebody, because of my large family, everybody saw you doing things. And of course, as a kid, I was always trying to figure out how to do things so nobody could see me. And so some of the hooks that have led me to Buddhism, I think, not only started with the visions, but started with my being in church. Because the place was small, on the first and third Sunday of each month, we all went to the Baptist church. And of course, that was my father's church. And on the second and fourth Sunday, everybody in the town went to the Methodist church. This is how we supported each other. And Methodists are very cool. So I was baptized when I was 7 years old. And when they baptize you, they sprinkle some holy water on you. The preacher says something, I don't remember what he said, but I remember one of the hooks was I got to sit up front on the front bench right in front of the altar. And there was this huge picture of Jesus. And I guess I kept staring at the picture because I'm thinking, And this was before I realized, by the way, that there were no Santa Claus. I didn't realize that until I was like 10. So I grew up in the country. I'm a late bloomer, okay? So I'm baptized because that was the way. And I kept looking at this photo of Jesus and I saw no magic, but inside of me, I felt like an amber. It was like a little flint of light, if I can explain it that way. And then, so I got baptized around 18 at the Baptist church. Now the Baptist church has a little bit more fire, a little bit less money. So the Methodist church, there are songbooks, pianos, and people sing, just like we chant in Buddhism. That's kind of like how it's sung. And then the Baptist church, the brothers would get together because there's no instruments, and they would sing a cappella to bring the spirit in the house. So here I am, I'm looking at all of this, and I, you know, and then there's always a Black woman who gets up and does a rendition of some kind of gospel song that just grabs everybody. And so people would have out-of-body experiences. They would talk in tongues, and I wanted nothing to do with it. I was scared. I was like, I can't go there. But that was my experience of growing up in the church in this little town. So I want to share a vision that I had at the age of 4. A lot of things happened with me. And I didn't know then what all of this stuff was, but I've gone back and go, okay, that happened, this happened, and that happened. So I have one of my great aunties, Aunt Elzada. She was labeled, diagnosed as being crazy. And what happened with her is only God knows, but she was very dark skinned. Her complexion was darker than blue. And I'm 4, right? And she sat in a rocking chair and she had big eyes. She always had some crusty stuff around her mouth. She never said a word. And so I was standing at the door, peeking, looking at her, because one of her things that she would do is she would catch flies. And I was like, wow. But I knew if she got up from that rocking chair, I was going to run. I had sense enough to know that. And so spirit has played a part in my life, and I'm going to hook this up with what happened to me at my Jukai ceremony, because Jukai is like an amazing ceremony. First, you work for about 6 months. You're meeting with your teacher. You're sewing. You got a brown robe teacher. You got another brown robe sewing teacher, and they are, you know, they want to make sure these stitches are right. I want to make sure the stitches are right. Hand off the rakasu to my teacher. It's a ceremony. And then during Jukai, and thank you guys for coming, by the way, I really appreciated that. The part where my teacher hands me the robe back and asking me about the precept, at that moment I had a vision. Aunt Azetta came, I saw her. She came, she had a walking stick, she made her way on the front row and she sat down. And my teacher was like, do you accept? And I'm like, and there she was. She was at my Jukai. Now, so I came back and I go, yes, I accept. It took me 4 days to remember she showed up. She was not crazy. She was transmitting to me at that moment. When I was standing there looking at her, she saw me. She was letting me know, I saw you, and this is what I did with those flies that you thought I ate. She would capture the fly, put the fly in her lap. The fly would fly up. She did this all day. She's one of the masters, okay? So that was a hook for me. I didn't know it was a hook at 4, but it really was. And another vision I had, so I'm spirit, you know, I rest on my ancestors. I love the idea of having ancestors. We all do, I believe, but it's just my belief. So, okay, I'm still 4. And my mother sends me to the spring to get water. We have two springs, good water in Georgia. And I'm bopping down the trail with my pail. Who sends a four-year-old to get springs, to get water? Well, my mother did. And I happen upon the biggest, blackest snake curled up under a tree. And I locked eyes with this snake. And the next thing I knew, my mother, I had turned around, ran back home, dropped the bucket. My mom is shaking me. I'm frantic, right? That snake, you know. Is that it? How much time? How much more time do I have, Jim?
Oh, you have plenty more time.
Okay.
Yeah, plenty more time.
Plenty. Shalane, take all night. I will listen.
No. No. So, you know, that was some of the beginning of my training of being in my body, being in the country, waking up with the sun, and you know, so the whole town, from the schools to the church to the parents, to all the parents, there were no poor, there were no homeless people in this town because everybody took care of each other. What they wanted for their children, they wanted us to be educated. And being educated to them was having a high school diploma. So there was an agreement with the church, with the schools, with parents, with, you know, whoever was involved to make sure we went to school. And that was something that, you know, I believe in that. I graduated with a high school diploma. I also had a voter's registration card when I graduated from high school. And I also had my driver's license. Those were the three big documents for children. So I mastered that. And then, so at this point, I'm in Miami. So I've left Georgia, I left the toilets, the pigs, the gardens, and I'm in Miami, where I actually graduated school, high school. I entered college, and I said, hey, if they want high school education, I'm just going to give them a little bit more. And I'm still in the church. I'm still going to church, but I'm not satisfied. There has always been something inside of me to push me forward. And let me see what else I want to share with you. So the church played that major role in my life, and I've explained what that's about. So I finally moved out to California. I'm working at the post office. So I went to college. I need a job. I'm working at the post office. I'm totally fatigued. And I came out to California on a vacation, landed in San Francisco on a clear night. How often does that happen? Made my way into Sacramento, transferred my job. I was like, I'm leaving the South. Because I didn't realize when I left Georgia that Florida was further south. You know, that was just, how can I know this stuff? And so the job transferred me, but I'm still not right. I'm still dreaming about snakes. What is wrong with me? I think I'm crazy. And someone said, oh, well, maybe you should get a massage. So I go get a massage, and I felt just like I felt after that massage, that someone had lied to me all of these years, because I think I was 10 or 11 before I realized Santa Claus was not that magic thing. There was like the white Santa Claus, because there were no black Santa Claus in the story. I couldn't figure out how he landed on the roof, came down the chimney. And when he got to our house, we got some oranges, some apples, some peppermint. And then I found the toys. I mean, I was just like, so when I got the massage, I felt the same way. It's like something has been holding a huge part of me back. And then I felt relieved. And I was like, where can I get more of this massage stuff? I couldn't afford it. I think you can get an hour and a half massage for like $70 back then. Try that now. And so someone said, well, maybe you should. So I said, okay, I'm going to go to massage school because I want to get massaged every day. I did not go to massage school to be a massage provider. I went there to get the work. And then while I'm in massage school, someone mentioned Rolfing to me. Now, we talk about stored consciousness. We talk about karma. We talk about seeds being planted. And, you know, it's like, where is the stuff planted? I'm here to tell you, I believe my experience says it's planted in our gut. It's planted in our joints. It's planted in our muscles, planted in our cells. It's called cellular memory. It's probably other places too. So I got raw. It totally changed my mind. It totally tweaked who I was. I felt one with the universe. I felt like my feet were balanced. Hi, Ryan. My Rolfer is in here somewhere. Hi, Ryan. I felt like my feet was balanced. I also had to go to therapy because being raw is like stirring up the muck of life. And just like no mud, no lotus. You never see the mud. You always see the lotus and the Buddha sitting on the lotus. Well, what about that mud? And that's what came up for me. So at this point, I knew I was going to quit the post office and I knew that I was going to make massage a profession. That's how I got to Wilbur Hot Springs. And that's a whole nother story. I'm not going to go into that. I became their massage provider on the property. I realized right away that my training was not enough. So I decided to spend a weekend, a month studying deep tissue and everything, anatomy and physiology and all of this stuff. And the teacher was profound because he taught in a way that I understood. And I thought, okay, well, I want to be either a physical therapist or chiropractor, or how about a Rolfer? No, I have to go in the cold to study. PTs work under MDs. I want to be a doctor of chiropractic. And I realized when I applied, I needed all of my science because that education I got in the South excluded physics, excluded chemistry, excluded biology, algebra. It's like, how do you graduate people? You don't have these basic skills. So remember, I think I'm dumb, right? So New College in San Francisco, how did I get to Buddhism? I went this route. I went the long way around. I went through bushes and trees and rocks fell on my head. So at that time, there was a school in San Francisco called New College. And they, for 2 years, I studied physics, chemistry, biology. I did the fast track too. And I had a tutor to help me. And then I went into chiropractic school and I graduated in 1993. So now I'm a doctor. Now my family say, well, you know, we'll go out and visit her and all of this stuff. And I think that putting myself in the position that dig, that hunt, I read somewhere that enlightenment is in the effort, is in the dig. And boy, I was digging, but I felt like I was really making something of myself until that fire happened at Wilbur Hot Springs. And now I don't have a job. And they fired me. It's like, I don't have a job. And then I was in a car accident, another big hook where an 18-wheeler hit my Mini Cooper, boom, messed me up physically, broken some teeth, ripped back. And, you know, I'm just all busted up, right? And so I was invited to go to Tassajara by one of the therapists there. And I was like, nope, I'm not going in the woods no more to do this stuff. But he asked me 3 times. And on the third time, I guess I guess my ancestors said, go and see what it's all about. So I go to Tassajara. If you've never been to Tassajara, please, you have to take this journey, because just getting there is amazing. So I landed in Tassajara and my life changed again. I did body work on all the students. I did body work for the guests, and I messed around and did body work on one of the priests. Talking about transmission. Hello. So I worked on him that night. I had a vision. Here is the last vision. Here's the vision I had. There was this entity, translucent, looking at me and doing this, like he's rolling a joint, right? And I'm looking at this and I go, what? And he, poof, he was gone. And so it was that, like, I never went into Zendo the first summer I worked at Tassajara. I thought it was weird. But they do have a great bookstore. So I started reading. I started seeing all of these great priests that would come through. They've written books. They all come to Tassajara. And my life, I decided this is the path. I don't have that flame, that amber. It's not burning. I've been hit upside the head quite a bit, but that thing to say what is next is not there. So I just, you know, this is wild to tell you my story. You guys are looking at me. And anyways, I'm going to end it there. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Woo! Wow. Whoa.
Such deep gratitude. Deep, amazing sharing. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
Are you open to receiving some questions? Or
yes. Would you like all yours? Yes.
I'll be glad to.
Thank you.
notice the hands raised, and it looks like Sohan Jim Hare has his hand raised. And...
Yes, thank you so much, Shalima.
Yeah, thank you.
You know, I wrote down this sentence that you said.
Uh-oh.
Who am I and what am I here to do?
Yep.
And that is the sentence. That's, you know, I feel like, you know, wildly, we like have like wildly different lives, but that sentence, I think so many Zen students have that sentence in common. Who am I and what am I here to do? And not finding the answer at the post office. You know, I didn't find the answer at the factory jobs that I worked right out of college, and I couldn't go into the corporate, you know, world. And so I studied economics, for God's sake, and like, what did I want to do with that? Nothing, you know? And because the main question that I'd been ignoring was, who am I and what am I here to do? And that was the one that I had to answer before I could do anything. So I feel that commonality, you know, in our questions. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And I'm still asking that question. Who am I and what am I here to do? Yes. Thank you.
Biba, your hand is raised. You have to unmute yourself.
Okay. Thank you so much for sharing. I would have never guessed that you had like a childhood that you described. I definitely like, I think that what stood out to me the most was their ending. Like, I just love how it was short and sweet. Like at the end, you're just like, that's searching. You know what I mean? Like, you got to that point where it's like, I'm at a point where I'm with the way. I'm with it. Yeah. And I'm in it. And it's just, I can relate to that so much. You know, like for me, that was last year in September. So yeah, and it's not perfect. There's still things going on and things happening, you know. There's still mud, but but I know exactly what you mean. Like, you with the way, you know. And I also, another thing I noticed was you smiling the entire time.
Thank you so much. I just realized now that I've been on the path that all of those things I experienced were gateways. And it's my understanding that all gateways lead to the self.
Exactly.
And yep. So I'm very blessed to have actually experienced that stuff. Thank you.
Yes. I think once you get to that point, the past is more like brag worthy, you know, like, this is my past, you know, instead of being like ashamed or like trying to hide it. Like, no, this is my past. This is what got me here today.
Yes. Right? Yes.
So thank you.
Thank you.
Jody.
Thank you, Shalima. That was a really beautiful, beautiful rendition of your story. And like Biba, I really noticed like how your eyes were just lit up through the whole thing, right? You know, just have this beautiful, you know, feeling coming out of your eyes. And like Jim, you know, you just took me through your story. But while you were talking about your story, I was thinking about like all the different things I also have done, you know, like looking for this and kind of bouncing from one thing to another. And so it was really nice to hear the way you told it and the confidence and, you know, you have landed in a resoundingly firm place. And so it just, everything just seems to be unfolding really nicely. So I just wanted to thank you for this beautiful story. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, Jen. Thank you.
Larry.
Thank you, Shalima.
Larry, thank you.
You know, I think your story is like way different than a lot of people in this Sangha story, and I'm so glad for that, you know, for your unique path, you know. It's great to listen to you, and thank you so much. And what's the difference between a sip and a snippet? No, I guess they're
a snippet is Southern.
Oh.
Southern saying. A sip is universal.
Oh.
The same.
Yeah. May I ask, when did you first sit? I think you said you didn't go into the Zendo at Tassajara when you were
there. So my first year working at Tassajara was in 2015, and I went into the Zendo at 2016.
Ah,
yes.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Well, I wanted to say something too, Shalima. It was so amazing to me the way that you could hold all of these experiences that you had that didn't make sense to you, like the visions and even ones that were frightening. And yet you, as you said, something in you just kept pushing you forward. And And now as you were giving your talk, it's as if you were like weaving this tapestry of your life and, you know, seeing how everything interconnected and was part of bringing you to this path. And it's just really beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you. I actually wrote a little snippet on Saturday. It's kind of short. If you guys would like to hear it,
yeah,
I can sure. do that.
Go for it.
I wrote, "Life is woke. Breathing in, breathing out, opening a spaciousness in my cells, my muscles, and my joints. The amber sparks reminds me I am as old as the sand. She whispers again to breathe in, expanding my belly, and breathe out, 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 and watch the inhale."
Wow.
Thank you.
So Karen wants to speak.
Thank you so much, Shalema. It was really great to hear your journey. I also was resonating with a lot of what you were saying of, you know, well, the not knowing and searching, the search. It's all about the search, you know, and where does it take me? But I also wondered if you would say something about how it was that you met, I believe your teacher, Zenju. Did you meet her in Berkeley or how did that happen, I guess?
You know, it's sometimes it's very difficult to be the only Black embodied person in a situation. And I was like that a lot at Tassajara. And so I started reading books like Being Black, Baptist and Buddhist, and, you know, just, I can't remember the other books. I started reading Reb's book about the precepts. And I got stopped when he talked about renunciation. And I was like, I don't have anything that's not me. And I started asking every priest that I could get my hands on, is there a Black person who's written on these precepts? You know, and they, like, no one could answer that for me. I'm serious. This is Tassajara, right? So I'm at San Francisco Zen Center is where I meet Osho. I walk in, I see her, and I was like, oh my God, because I had read one of her books. And I'm just like, I'm really loud. You're supposed to use your little voice. Oh my God, oh my God. She goes, well, maybe you want to join me for dinner. You don't just join Zenyu. You join her and about 16 other people. So I'm sitting there and they're doing all the Zen talk. And when I could get in, I say to myself, maybe somebody here can tell me who Black, preferably a woman, has written on the precepts. I could feel Zenyu boring into my right temple. She says, I'm like, really? Is her book Tell Me Something About Buddhism, which Tassajara did not have that book. So that's how I met her. And I was like, this is my teacher. I'm going to ask her to be my teacher. She never said yes. She didn't say no. I'm going to ask her. So when they came to Tassajara, when the Sangha came to Tassajara, I was there and I just sat down like I was part of the group. That's how that happened. Yeah.
Right.
Thank you. It's all of these viewpoints, you know, I was supposed to meet her and I'm supposed to sit with you guys too. I really, you know, I really appreciate you listening. I couldn't hear myself talk, and I appreciate everybody's time. It's been lovely.
Thank you, Shalima.
Yes, thank you so much. It looks like Ryan would like to speak.
Ryan, hi. Hey. Hi, I invited Ryan to come and sit with us tonight. Hi, Ryan. Hey. How did I do?
You got the spirit in.
The one I was running from? Thank you.
How's your gut feeling? That's my question.
Like, expansive. You know, I have two of these under my belt now. I'll probably go for a third one wherever I'm being asked. I don't know. But I'm feeling alive. I feel wanted. I know that I can do it. Thank you. I'm not afraid. There's no fear in the gut anymore.
Love you. Love you. Thank you.
Wow. Meg wants to speak now.
Yeah, Shalima, I have only gotten to know you through a little picture in a little space. Yeah. And I'm very moved and touched by your visions, by your path, and most profoundly by your joy. Your joy is just through the internet is contagious. You've changed the whole spirit of my evening. Wow. And it's just, it's so uplifting to hear the journey, and to hear you're trusting the path and your movement in it. And just thank you so deeply for sharing your joy with us. I'm gonna cry, so I'm gonna stop talking.
No, then I'll cry. Thank you.
They're tears of profound sense of yeah. Thank you.
Well. Shalima, are you, how is it to do the after lecture chant too for us?
I love it. Thank you.
Yay. Yay.
You know, they did put me in the choir and I couldn't sing a tap, right? In the Baptist church.
Oh.
But I can definitely chant the after lecture. I can do, I love these chants. So thank you. Thank you. May our intention equally extend to every being and place with the true merit of Buddha's way. Shujo muhen segando, bono mujen segandan, homo muryo segangaku. Usado mujo seganjo. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it.